Well, the Christmas season is here with us, and Christmas is not too far away. When you picture or think about the Christmas story, what comes to mind? When you think about a nativity scene, for instance, or when you think about Christmas pageants, Christmas plays, Christmas songs, what comes to your mind? I think, typically, we think of how, you know, Mary and Joseph sitting in a little barn, a stable type of place, with a wooden kind of manger in which some hay and Jesus is laid. We see maybe the shepherds sitting there or standing there, kneeling there perhaps. And we see the three wise men off to the other side with their gifts of myrrh, frankincense, and gold. That's gold. We might picture this, you know, this bright big star overhead. And maybe off in the distance the angels are fading away with their chorus, their anthem. And we also picture, you know, off in the distance, the city of Bethlehem. We might picture, you know, prior to all this, Mary and Joseph riding their donkey. Mary is about to give birth, entering the city, and Joseph knocking on doors, going from one inn to the other, trying to find a room. And I'm not here to, you know, try to destroy this Christmas story, but what I'm going to say is, a lot of those details there aren't there in the Bible. What does the Bible say? This is found in Luke chapter 2. I'm going to be going through the first 7 verses of Luke chapter 2 here. Now in those days a decree went out from Caesar Augustus to register all the empire for taxes. And this was the first registration taken when Quirinius was governor of Syria. Everyone went to his own town to be registered. So Joseph also went up from the town of Nazareth in Galilee to Judea, to the city of David called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and family line of David. He went to be registered with Mary, who was promised in marriage to him, and who was expecting a child. While they were there, the time came for her to deliver her child. And she gave birth to her firstborn son and wrapped him in strips of cloth and laid him in a manger, because there was no place for them in the inn. And that's pretty much the first part of the nativity story. There's no account of Joseph, you know, going from door to door, knocking on the doors to try to find a room. It is also very strongly implied by the text that they arrived, and then, after some time had passed, the baby came. It could have been a week or two, even a month or two while they were there. And taking Matthew's account into account, it could be said that Joseph and Mary, in fact, used this census as an opportunity to make the move from Nazareth to Bethlehem. Because Nazareth was not as nice a place to live as Bethlehem. Now in Matthew, when they return back from Egypt, they first head to Judea again. And it was only after they had arrived that they're warned in a dream, after Joseph hears that, you know, Herod Antipas is still ruling, that they are warned to go back to Nazareth. So it could be said that already by this time, Joseph and Mary had intended to move out of Nazareth and to make their home in Bethlehem. The troublesome word is the inn. That's how it's been translated. But that's not how Middle Easterners would have understood it had they been reading this story. And we'll get to that. So where do we get some of these interesting details about supposedly, you know, this place where Jesus is born and where Mary and Joseph are staying to be kind of like this barn or a stable outside the city? And where do we get the idea that Mary, as she was approaching Bethlehem or as she got to Bethlehem, gave birth? Well, it comes from hundreds of years, in fact, about 1,800 years of church and Gnostic tradition. Justin Martyr is the one who first suggested that Mary and Joseph were staying outside of the city somewhere. Justin writes, "But when the child was born in Bethlehem, since Joseph could not find a lodging in that village, he took up his quarters in a certain cave near the village, and while they were there, Mary brought forth the Christ and placed him in a manger. And here the Magi came from Arabia and found him." And, you know, he goes on about different things. But basically, Justin had a certain theology in his mind. And this theology was that because this baby Jesus was divine, no one could be near when he was born. No, there could be no witnesses to his birth. Therefore, he had to make the story fit his theology. And therefore, in his comments, in his commentary, placed the birth of Jesus outside the city, apart from where anyone could see the birth and witness it. The idea about Mary giving birth before or right immediately after they arrive in Bethlehem comes from the Protevangelium of James. It's kind of this, you might call it a Gnostic work. It's like a novel. It first starts out with the account of Joachim and Anne, or Anna, who are said to be the parents of Mary, the mother of Jesus. And it resembles the story of Hannah and Samuel. Anne is barren, and so she prays to God that if she is given a child, that this child would be dedicated to God. And that's the first, almost a third, I think, of the account. The next part of the account is about Mary's early childhood, where she is an amazing prodigy, a wonder. She is absolutely pure and perfect, completely undefiled. As throughout this work, Mary's, the emphasis is on this absolute purity and perfection of Mary. But as Mary approaches 12 years old, when they're considered to become an adult, the problem is, as girls turn into women, certain things happen, which would then cause a defilement of the temple in which Mary was given when she was three. And so the priests gather, and one of the priests is Zechariah, whom in the Bible we know to be John the Baptist's father. And Zechariah then calls all the widowers of the area to bring lots to see who would be given Mary as a wife. The lot drawn is Joseph. And so, Joseph refuses, but he is convinced that if he doesn't take Mary, something bad will happen to him. And so Joseph takes them, but he does not marry Mary. And there are some other, kind of these fantastic events surrounding Mary. And then Joseph discovers Mary's pregnancy. And all throughout this work, different parts of the Gospel accounts as well as Old Testament quotes are weaved in to kind of make it sound authentic. Joseph discovers Mary's pregnancy, and she claims innocence. He believes her, but the priest does not. And so both Mary and Joseph are sent to trial by ordeal. They're sent on this journey, and if they come back alive and well, then they're innocent. They do. And then it picks up into where I read in Luke, this account of the Caesar Augustus and Quirinius and the census. And they start going traveling to Bethlehem. And then it is in this account that historically is the first record of when Mary gives birth right before they enter Bethlehem. And so it reads here, "And they came to the midst of the way, and Mary said unto him, Take me down from the ass, for that which is within me presses me to come forth. And he took her down from the ass and said unto her, Whither shall I take thee to hide thy shame? For the place is desert." And it's been noted that the writer of this little work had no idea of the geography of that area, because it wasn't actually desert, but quite fertile. And so, and then it suddenly switches into the first person, and Joseph begins speaking. "And he found a cave and brought her into it and set his sons by her. And he went forth and sought for a midwife of the Hebrews in the country of Bethlehem. Now I, Joseph, was walking." And so Joseph goes to find the midwife, and Mary gives birth to Jesus alone in a cave. And so this theme of the absolute purity and this kind of separateness of Mary is continued in this novel. And the midwife comes, and somewhere this person, this woman called Salome, comes into the story, and she doesn't believe, and through some fantastic events, Mary is proven to be still a virgin. The wise men come, and Herod orders the slaughter of all the children under two. Jesus is hidden, so is John the Baptist. Zechariah is questioned as to where his son is, and he says he doesn't know, is murdered in the temple, and Simeon is appointed to take Zechariah's place. And Simeon is, in this story, is the same Simeon as the one who was promised that he would not die until he sees the Messiah. And so you have this interesting little novel, as well as some of the early church fathers suggesting certain details of this Christmas story. Why? Why am I talking about this? Why am I bringing this up? Because I think it's easy to assume what we hear and what we've been taught is true. You know, this nativity story has been taught for almost 2 millennia. It's been told the same way for almost 2 millennia. And it's easy to assume that because it's been taught that for that long, and because everyone accepts it that way, this is true. And fortunately for this story, you know, some of these changes in detail really don't make much of a difference to the ultimate point, which is that Jesus came to be with his people. But perhaps there are other things that we believe, other things that we hold to be true, which could have greater consequences, both for us and for those around us. I guess that's why I'm bringing this up. And there are, by understanding the story in a different way, I think, you know, we can draw out from it meanings that are better, meanings that were more fully intended by the original author, in this case Luke. And I'm going to get into that next week. But what about, you know, this inn? The inn could also be translated as a guest room. A guest room in a private residence. The residence, the peasant residence in that area, and even today, at that time, even today, is typically a one-room affair. One room that's kind of divided into two. There's a lower level, which is the entry, and then a raised area. The raised area is the main living quarters. And the lower area is where the animals are housed. The livestock, the sheep, goats, cow, donkey, and whatever a person may have. The reason for that? Well, first of all, it prevents theft at night. They bring all the animals in, and it's more difficult to steal. Also, during the winter, they provide heat. You know, it's been suggested that, you know, this could be a solution to our energy crisis. You know, build our houses with stables as part of the house and bring our animals in at night. The manger is actually kind of a bowl or a depression between the two compartments, two sections, between the entry and the upper level. There's a depression. And so during the night, you know, the animals can feed. Well, kind of, it's raised so they don't have to stoop down. It's raised. And then if more feed needs to be placed, you know, the people don't have to go down into the entry area, but rather they can just put the things into the manger, the depression. Not only that, but it aids in cleaning the main area. You just sweep all the dust into the manger. And so, it is suggested that, actually, the evidence is quite strong that's what the story, the nativity story, is pointing to. Often, these residences would have a guest room, whether attached onto one side or above the house. And so, when Luke writes, because there was no place for them in the inn, what he's saying is that they were housed, they were brought into the main part of the house. They were invited to be part of the family with whomever they were staying, because there was no separate guest room that was available to them. It's also, the evidence is also pretty strong that This was a house of a relative that they stayed in. Now, Joseph and Mary, being of the line of David, would have had relatives in Bethlehem, which was still known as the city of David. So when David, or when Joseph, when he came into Bethlehem and said, "I am Joseph, son of Jacob, son of Matan, son of Eliezer, son of Eliud," the people there would know who he was. And family ties are much stronger than what we are typically familiar with. If a person, if a relative came into town, even if they had never been there before, even if they were cousins, distantly removed, they were still family. And it would be a dishonor for both the guest and the host, the guest to not ask for a room, and for the host to refuse a room. It would be a dishonor upon the entire community. And so it is difficult to imagine that Joseph and Mary would have been refused lodging in Bethlehem. So when a Middle Easterner reads these first few verses of Luke, they would think, "Oh, manger. Oh, they're in the main family room. Why not the guest room?" And Luke, the author, instinctively replies, "Because there was no place for them in the guest room." And the reader would conclude, "Ah, yes. Well, the family room is more appropriate anyway." So, now that I've completely destroyed the traditional nativity story, but it just gets me wondering how much of what we believe is like that. How much of what we have held on for so long, could it be quite different from what we understand it to be? And so, I guess my point this morning is that we shouldn't get so attached that we're brittle when we hear things that are different than what we assume is true. When we hear things that don't agree with our point of view, we shouldn't be so brittle that we crack and break. And I think as we are able to understand that other people may come at their viewpoints from a different way, that we're able to respect them, that we're able to listen to them rather than judging them. Now, we tend to try to fit everything inside a box. Now, everything, all the things that happen, all the things we hear, all the things we read, we try to fit into this box that each of us carries around with us. It's formed by our experience. I think we're frequently afraid of what's outside the box. My encouragement and my appeal this morning to all of us is that don't get stuck in a box. don't get stuck in a box to the point where we're destroyed by what's outside of it. Because isn't that in effect what Jesus did? You know, he came, his coming was completely outside the box. And it ended up destroying all those who kept inside their boxes. And I don't want to be that. And I don't believe any of you want to end up in that same box. Don't get attached to details, but look at the principles underneath. Respect other points of view, but always, you know, be on the search for what is more true and what is better. Because I think as we discover what is pure, what is more true, and what is better, we will come to understand our God and our Savior better. And so that is my prayer for you this morning.